Hey everybody, quick little bit of an introduction to today's episode with my guests, the Happy Pair. Absolutely love this. They're just two incredible people. Somebody I've looked up to a long time in the fitness industry, and their attitude towards health and wellness is something that I absolutely love. We talked everything here about living a vegan lifestyle and how the two boys used to play rugby. They're still pretty jacked. But they were much bigger, living a different lifestyle in terms of not being full vegan, and how they have made that change and how their energy levels have improved, their skin, their body composition, everything. So much value in here, whether you're somebody that just has ever been curious about a vegan lifestyle, about building muscle, losing body fat faster, using the vegan lifestyle, or using some of the principles from that. They give so much value in this episode. I also just wanted to say that the Happy Pair and myself will both be appearing at Wellfest this year on the Sunday, with Super Value. So Super Value have the Well Food area at Wellfest, and they're one of the biggest, they are Ireland's biggest health and fitness range of food. So I'm very, very happy to be doing some work with them, in alignment with them coming into Wellfest. So on Sunday the 13th of May, I'm on the sports panel discussion at, I think it's 10 past one, for about 40 minutes, talking about nutrition, talking about health, and the boys are going to be there as well from the Happy Pair. So I will see you all hopefully at Wellfest on the Sunday, and I will be in the Super Value area for most of the day. So be sure to come over, say hello, come have a chat, grab a selfie, and I look forward to seeing you all there, and I hope you enjoy this week's episode.
You're listening to the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where Irish fitness entrepreneur Brian Keane answers your questions and interviews leaders in the world of fitness, health, mindset, and natural wellness. Come join the fun.
Lads, welcome to the podcast. I am sitting here in the amazing Happy Pair restaurant, shop, store. You've got a little bit of everything here. Lads, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Brian.
Tell us a little bit, I've spoken in the introduction a little bit about your background, all the amazing things you've done and achieved. Tell everybody a little bit more about yourselves.
So this is Stephen speaking, we're identical twins, and this is David here. Do you want to say hello?
Hello.
How are you? We're identical twins. We started our business called The Happy Pair in 2004. We were kind of two hippie idealists. We were 24 with a dream of creating a happier, healthier world and building community. And when we first started the business, we wanted to start it as a charity, because we were very much, although we'd done degrees in business, and at the time we were kind of doing male modeling, we were playing semi-pro rugby.
They're super handsome guys, for anybody listening, just to clarify that up front.
It was all about the American dream. Like, it was all about kind of money, materialism will make you happy. And then this is after college. And then we kind of felt a little hollow. I don't know, just something didn't quite sit with us. So we kind of decided, we're identical twins. So you spend your whole life, you're Flynn twin, or you're the twins, or Dave and Steve, but you're never Steve on your own or Dave on your own. So we decided we'd have a divorce and go off.
What age were you then?
We were 21, 22.
21, yeah.
We decided we'd go off. Mark, you're steering this nicely. We decided we'd go off traveling separately, kind of in search of truth, to kind of find out, you know, what. At the time, we were just going off traveling, but if I look back retrospectively, it was kind of, without sounding cliched, it was to search for truth for us, what gave us meaning in our life. So at the time, Dave was playing off two in golf.
Yeah, I went over to be semi. I went over to be pro in golf. I went to South Africa to be a pro. I was 21. And then, I guess, a month later, I ended up selling my clubs and I was reading books on health and whatever, and then became a vegetarian, and then became a vegan, and got into fasting and cleansing, and then just went off traveling. Ended up spending a couple of years going, wandering the world, really meeting all sorts of colourful, interesting people. He lived in a cave in Costa Rica for a while. You know, like, there was all sorts of different, very different experiences.
And the whole,
you know,
the whole purpose.
Which was very different coming from a small town in Ireland where... Yeah.
Middle class.
You know, went to all my schools, we played rugby, we were, you know, we were
went
just normal Irish
lads,
ham and cheese sandwiches, and, you know, tried to meet a nice girl at the weekend. You know, it was very normal kind of Irish existence. So to go question your social norms that you were brought up with, and go, you know, explore different things and get into, we spent lots of time in meditation centers and, you know, really exposed to all sorts of different things. And even like as a male growing up, where it was, you know, we played semi-pro rugby, so it's very masculine. We come from a family, all boys. And then to go, and I thought yoga was just for girls. This is back in, this must have been, this is like 16 years ago or 17 years ago. So this is, you know, I guess 2000. And yoga I thought was just for girls. And it, like my own mentality would be, yoga's for pussies. Like, I can't do yoga, like I'm a man. And that was my mentality. And then I guess I remember, I think it was traveling through Central America, and I just kept yoga. I kept meeting people doing yoga. And I was like, would you ever just, yoga's for pussies. I don't want to do yoga. And then some pretty girl asked me to do yoga. Yeah, of course, I love yoga. And then, yeah, I guess yoga became part of our lives then, you know.
So was it you that started that journey? Did you find this independently of one another?
Yeah, I went away to Canada because we were born in Calgary, so we had Canadian passports. So we went, or citizenship. So I flew to Vancouver because I'd met a kind of couple of lads who, when we were interrailing 6 months previous, that were able to go out and socialise and not get drunk.
Yeah.
And they were great crack. I was like, what? You don't drink? And you're able to go out and have great crack? And I was amazed. And as an Irish male, that's like, how do you do that?
Yeah.
Superpowers.
Yeah.
So I went over and I stayed with him for a few days, and then I made my way up to Whistler, which is kind of a famous ski resort. And I wanted to get a job on the mountain and see what happened. Because I remember seeing a video when I was younger of kind of parties and looked great. And I met a guy from Greystones, and he said I could sleep on his floor, because I didn't have very much money. And I was sleeping on his floor, and in the apartment was an Australian dude, this guy called Adrian, and he was cooking dinner. And he was cooking dinner with sweet potato, coconut, and lentils. Like, I didn't know what the hell a lentil was.
Yeah.
Sweet potato, what's a sweet potato and coconut milk? You know, I was totally like, what are you eating? Like, and I tasted it, was like, jeez, that's gorgeous. And we got talking more, and he told me he was a vegetarian. And I'd never met a man that was a vegetarian.
Yeah.
So, wow, men can be vegetarians too. So we talked more about it, and kind of I decided, well, cool, that sounds cool, can I eat, you eat? So I ate what he did for the rest of the week, and at the end I decided I wanted to be a vegetarian.
Yeah.
And then, as Dave mentioned, we kind of, I guess, being twins, you're kind of born competing for love and attention, so you're highly competitive.
Yeah.
So we were, Dave went vegetarian, I went vegetarian, Dave went vegan, I went vegan, I went righteous vegan, then I went, got into raw food, so I was kind of eating a raw food diet for about a year. He got into fasting, cleansing, enemas, I got into that. So we were always kind of,
but it was really just exploring health and seeing how it linked to your own personal happiness, own sense of self. And, you know, I signed up for marathons without training. I did 30-mile road races without training at all, just to see if you know, how diet affected my own physicality.
Kind of fasting for 7 days. This type
Going fasting, meeting people who were, you know, I met people when I was living in Costa Rica who were training to be breatharians, which is totally out there, like crazy stuff. But it's
what's a breatharian?
So people that don't eat food.
Okay.
They're like, you know, they like met
they
these
get.
Crazy people that were, you know, they were really exploring and experimenting with the limits of life and and how it makes you feel and whatever.
And very easy to be cynical of it, but it was very easy to leave,
but it was very interesting to meet these people and hang out with them and see their perspective on lives and look in their eyes and go, jeez, your eyes are so fucking blue. I've never seen someone with eyes like that. Wow.
Yeah.
You're a pretty high vibe dude, you know, and like, you know, as an impressionable 21-year-old, they're very interesting experiences to have. But all this in context, we were 24, maybe, and Steve, or maybe we were 23, Steve calls me and he says, Dave, like, I've changed so much. Like, he was living in somewhere, Canada, I was living in Mexico
I was living in, what's it called, Corsica.
Corsica, anyway, he calls me up and he says, Dave, I want to start, like, a health food revolution or something. Do you want to, like, try and get a movement? Like, I'd love to, like, I've changed so much, it feels so good. Like, I want to share this with as many people as we can.
Yeah.
It's like, brilliant, Steve, sounds great. What's that look like? And he says, do you want to start a vegetable shop? And I was like, a fucking vegetable shop? Like, what do you mean a vegetable shop? And I was like, yeah, trust me, Dave, trust me. So, age 24, we came back home, and Steve one day morning walks into the local veg shop, and he says, how he is? Is the owner here? He goes in, your man says, he's just out the back. So Steve goes out the back, and sitting in the red van is some lad reading the paper, and Steve knocks on the window. He says, I was wondering when you sell me your shop. Your man goes, jeez, that's a big question for Monday morning. And they kind of worked at a deal, and, you know, we were 24. It was
Ireland was an economic
it was 2004.
Boom.
Yeah. So
we did a business plan on the back of an envelope and borrowed 100
grand. Not quite an envelope,
yeah,
but we were able to borrow 100 grand pretty easily and take over and start with a vegetable shop and a dream of starting a food revolution.
And kind of wanted to start as a charity because it was very much, although we'd come from business college and male modeling and rugby and materialism, and then we went off and became stinking hippies.
Yeah.
So we came back and we were very much that money, this is not about money, this is about creating a better world, this is about much greater ideals.
And even on that note, I remember we obviously called it the happy pair because there's two of us and we're twins and we were selling fruit, so pears, happy pair, pun on pear. But Steve was adamant on calling it a different name, and I remember it just wouldn't, like, the sign man came out and he had all the letters done and he couldn't actually fit it across the front of the shop, and that was Flinner's Fruit and Veg for Social Change.
Rolls right off the tongue.
But it was really just to be super explicit of that this was not, you know, this wasn't about, you know, getting Ferraris and, you know, a yacht.
And
this is about really affecting society.
We started with kind of a little red van. We'd get up at 4:30, go into Dublin Fruit Market, buy our fruit and veg, come back and sell cabbages to grannies. It's pretty sexy.
That's how it all started. That's unbelievable when you think about where you're at now with the restaurant, the food, the books. Like, you go into any store in Ireland, your food is there, or the book is there, or something, happy pair is there. And to think that that's what it started with. That's absolutely amazing. Talk me through where it is now, and from that time period of 2004 to now, how did it expand?
So I guess in
terms of the movement, because you have created a movement, you have a an ecosystem, an environment, and everything, health and mindfulness and meditation and yoga, and that whole side of things is what I think when I think of the happy pair. How did you basically get from point A to point B, which is, you know, the short synopsis?
Falling into loads of holes.
I think
doing something you love and trying to, like, in essence, like, the reason why we started the business was on the most selfish level to create a support system for the lifestyle we wanted to live. So, like, in essence, I love healthy food. I want to have a life where it's around me. And where everyone around me is into it, so it supports
Build our own bubble.
I want people who are into kind of movement around me. Cool, let's start doing more of this. And that was one of the main reasons. Like, when we came back, we had changed our diet and we were eating a whole food plant-based diet or a vegan diet. I remember you
when we left we were like rugby players, so all our friends were into drinking pints and eating burgers and chips, so it was like, ooh, they don't want to hang out with us anymore, and we don't really want to hang out with them, so you had to kind of start meeting other people. And
like,
start,
when we came back, I didn't know of anyone that was vegan in any of my friends or in anyone, but I knew a friend, Gavin Keller's brother Andy Keller, was a vegan. And I remember in 2004 calling Andy up and going, "Hey Andy, are you a vegan?" He said, "Yeah." "Geez, any chance we could meet up and just talk about what it's like to be vegan?" And his mate Andy Godfrey was a vegan too. So the four of us met up, four men. We were 21 or 20, and 20. Maybe 22. And we all kind of sat up and we had our little vegan meetup to discuss what it was like to be little Greystones. Any tips? What do you know? This type of thing. So it was, you know, trying to build a whole support network around what we wanted to do.
That's, but because I remember what Ireland was like 10-15 years ago.
Vegetarian is weird,
but we certainly couldn't start.
I laughed when you said the vegan for girls or vegetarian for girls, yoga for girls. I'm like, that was Ireland 10-15 years ago compared to the complete shift now.
I was just going to say that like, back then we never labelled the business as vegetarian or vegan or anything. It was just like healthy business that was for everyone. It was very community focused. It certainly,
because we started in a small town in Greystones, where
so you couldn't be extreme, like, people wouldn't have accepted, would have thought it was some religious movement or some you know, little niche. So it had to be very, like, right from the start we were very inclusive. We used to go to local schools and talk, and really, like, community was such a central part of it right from the very start, because we grew up in Greystones, we played rugby, we knew a huge amount of people. So that was, but to bring it back to today, we now employ about 160 people, where there's three kind of bits of the business, and it's, you know, it's flying in all sorts of different. It's turned into a business from a corner shop to where there's now, you know, a finance team.
8-9 million last year, so it's become quite a business.
It's become a business, like, where
we've
used to
three, we've three cafes, we've two shops, we've a farm, we've written three cookbooks, two which were best-selling. Third one's out in May,
which will also be a bestseller. I've already pre-ordered. Links will be in the show notes. We'll talk about it at the end.
What else do we do? We products about 24, maybe 28 products. Lots of products in about 1,000 stores in Ireland.
Yeah.
And hopefully in the UK by later this year.
We kind of do lots of talks or YouTube, or we do lots of stuff anyway.
It's really, really fun. It's kind of growing and evolving, and huge amount of opportunities. And it's, you know, the soil, it's a lot easier now than it was when we started.
I can imagine, but we were talking about that just before we went on air, that we see the tip of the iceberg, the 14 year overnight success.
Yeah,
you know, where you're traveling the world, you're speaking, you've got the books, the stores, the business, everything, like, and literally a movement of people who either follow you or live by your lifestyle principles, but we don't see the time period up to that, the 14 years.
Yeah.
I'm really curious myself, something that I'm a little bit, not obsessed with, but I'm very, very fascinated about is people that are such high achievers, how they start their day. And, you know, I live by the adage that, you know, to own the day, own the morning. What does your first hour, 2 hours of your morning look like? I know from seeing you on Instagram stories where you're super active, you've got different things you do. What does the first, does it look the same for both of you? Do you both get up early? How does the first hour or 2 hours of your day look?
Yeah, I think we kind of got in the habit of getting up early. Probably we always did it, but in particular when we used to go to the fruit market, used to get up at 4:30. And at that time we were kind of big into meditation. So we were kind of meditating 2 hours every single day.
We were
day.
Doing a lot of Vipassana. Did you ever do those Vipassana, those 14 day meditation?
Something I've looked into, we were speaking about this actually.
We used to do lots of them or whatever, but back then, 14 years ago, we used to
get up at 3:30 and meditate
for an hour before we go
to the fruit market.
But this is when we were crazy. You know, we were totally crazy.
We were way out there. And then we've always been used to kind of getting up really early, and we had a great appreciation for kind of just dawn and the kind of the stillness that's there, and the ability when everyone's asleep, you can kind of get your thoughts together, and it's a nice reflective space. And I don't know. I love the morning. Some people prefer the evening, but you know, each to their own. But generally our day to day now is I get up around 5:30, that sort of thing, around that type of space. I get up generally, we train. It's kind of only in the last couple of years we've really kind of pinned it down that we get up, meet over here, whether it be 5:30 or 6:00, we'll train for an hour. And training could be, some days it could be meditation, some days it's yoga, some days it's calisthenics, some days it's bar work, some days it's handstands, some days it's gymnastics, today it was flexibility. So we're always mixing it up because
it's really more about movement rather than having muscles. It's about being functional. You know, we're 38, so it's not like we're less interested in being like He-Man, and much more interested in flexibility and movement and mobility. 100%.
And kind of interested in being in the circus. Like gymnastics, really
interested
in gymnastics.
Yeah,
really interested.
We're trying to keep up with our daughters. We both have kids, not together but separately.
Yeah.
And they do gymnastics, so we're very interested in trying to keep up with them.
Amazing.
So we'll do that. We'll always train. Pretty much, I'd say 6 days a week.
But something, can I say, like, as part of our morning routine, which has kind of been something that kind of happened very organically, is we swim in the sea at sunrise. So that, at sunrise, we live in Greystones, which is right beside the sea. So it kind of happened organically a few years ago where we just started, we used to go down and take photos of the sunrise because we were up and we were kicking around.
Yeah.
And then we suddenly started swimming.
And we found people really engaged. Like, the sunrise was a great symbol for hope, and it was, it showed beauty and natural.
But we used to love going down and watching it because it was just such a lovely time of the day. It's very reflective. You're watching the night go to the day.
Yeah.
So we used to be down taking photos for a few years, and then it was only a couple of years ago.
We swimming. Some days you'd be swimming, some days you wouldn't. And then,
but then it just suddenly one day we started swimming one day, and then the next day at sunrise, and then the next day. And then suddenly there was a few others joined. And now, like today, there was probably 25 of us down swimming at sunrise at 6:30.
Yeah.
You know, we have tea. We barely great chats, like such a good community.
Great friendship around.
But it
kind of started out in that, like, we'd be doing it and then a few friends joined in, and you get messages on Snapchat largely it was Snapchat initially, getting messages saying, geez, lads, looks amazing, can I come and join you?
Yeah.
And they're only seeing a picture from their bed and going, wow, it looks beautiful. Where the reality was, it was 0 degrees and the water was
fine. And the wind would have skinned you.
Yeah.
So I remember getting those messages and going, all right, well, here, listen, we're going to do a swim rise and everyone's invited, and we're going to bring tea and we're going to bring...
What does swim rise mean?
We're going to swim at sunrise. So we're going for a swim at sunrise. This is on Tuesday. So I said a Thursday, meeting at the shop at 4:30 a.m. We're going to bring tea and porridge.
When was this?
This was like 2 years ago, maybe 3 years
ago.
2 years ago.
2 years ago. And Siobhan, who was head of social media at the time, she said, well, lads, why don't you put that up in other things and just see what happens?
Yeah.
So we put it up on Facebook, we put it up on Twitter, put it up on Instagram. We said, I should see, there could be 10 people. It's just 4:30 a.m. Who the hell's going to get up?
Yeah. It was June, so sunrise.
It's 4:50. So met Dave at 4 a.m. We were pouring the porridge. I was like, well, I cook much. What do you reckon? It's just only out. We cook a load. So we cooked a fair old whack and walked out expecting to be kind of 5-10 people. It was about 150, maybe 200 people.
Jesus.
At 4:30 a.m. We all walked down the middle of the road down to see the sunrise, and we all made love. It was great. Okay, the love thing is a joke.
Yeah,
but we all just went for a swim at sunrise. We had our porridge, we had a bit of tea, and it was beautiful. Just celebrating, you know, just the beautiful sunrise.
Yeah.
And you met kind of like-minded people, and by 5:30 it was all over.
Amazing.
Yeah, beautiful. We've done kind of a number of them. Sometimes you have 500 people. I remember December 2 years ago, we'd about 500 people. It was 0 degrees.
And we had hot tub on the beach.
So yeah, you get great.
But back to morning routine. So this we've gotten the habit the last couple of years of swimming at sunrise. So
yeah.
That obviously changes all year round because we're so far north in Ireland.
Yeah.
That like in summer it can be 4:50 or 4:45, even back to 4:40, and then in winter it can be 8:40. So it's like it's constantly changing. At the moment it's 6:30. The hour goes back next week, so it'll be back to 7:30. So it's constantly 2 or 3 minutes. So you've got to constantly change your morning routine and adapt, like. Which is kind of cool. It inbuilt into your morning flex. You can't be too rigid.
The seasons.
You know, usually the last 6 months we trained before swimming, but now it's probably going to shift to where we'll train after swimming. Yeah. This morning was the first day we trained after swimming.
Then generally, pretty much every morning, I'll have breakfast with my family, my wife and my 3 kids, and then I try to bring the kids to school. Class. I try to do it every day because I just think there's something beautiful about bringing your children to school every day. And
yeah.
I'm fortunate enough that I can walk to school, so we'll all walk down by the sea and very lovely.
That's an amazing way to kick off your day. It's literally like all the setting yourself up for the day, particularly when family is something that's so important for those listening.
It's something I've had to kind of work hard at to try to put family.
But the swim bit, I would think, is an incredible thing because the water is cold. Like, you know, at the moment it's 4.7 degrees, so it's technically ice swimming.
Yeah.
So, like, to go down and face that first thing in the morning is so metaphorical or symbolic for. You're like, if you can do this first thing in the morning, go embrace, like, where you're afraid, there's adrenaline, like, the whole day, you know, you have to surrender into it. So
it's really, because it's so cold and bracing, it brings you back to the present moment.
Yeah.
You come out going, what was I worried about?
What was that list that was mentioned?
It's a beautiful day, and it could be lashing rain and manky. And you go, just didn't realise it's a gorgeous day. And it's manky. But you're just going,
you're in a state of bliss.
Yeah,
from the
cold bliss. It's fabulous. And then there's a lovely friendship around it, people that we swim with every day, and it's beautiful.
How often would you do that? Would you
every day?
Every day.
When we're here, do it every day.
Amazing.
It's gorgeous.
But it's that starting your day off like that. It's funny because that's something I've been experimenting with over the last couple of months myself. Cold and heat for changing your state, and it's amazing what you know an ice bath will do, or jumping into the sea. I live not that far away from the sea, and when you wake up and you're freezing at 4 or 5 or 6 a.m. and you come up, all of life's problems just don't seem to matter when you come out of that water.
Back into survival.
Much more intensity.
Yeah, it is. It's so primal, but in an amazing way. Yeah. Since you're a long time, you've obviously made the switch to vegan. There's a lot of people that are listening to this podcast that are either have done vegan recipes, they're following ones that you have in your books or online. What are the main kind of myths that people have around vegan? I know there's a couple that, you know, meatheads, bodybuilders, rugby players, footballers may have had. What are the kind of main myths?
I guess the biggest one that most people would say is around protein, and particularly, we know we played semi-pro rugby, so we were 14 or 15 stone of like 14. Muscle, like big thick necks on us, and big, you know, we were totally came from that world. But I think people think like if you're a vegan, you know, I think the word is so binary, but if you eat a lot of vegetables and you don't eat animals anymore, you know, people think you're going to be a skinny hippie dude that isn't strong, you know, with some weak kind of, you know, yoga, you know, he's like part female, you know, like as a male, they might think, geez, you're some pussycat or whatever.
Yeah.
But the reality is like, you know, protein, there's protein in everything. We just have associated a society that, oh, it's meat. And if it's not meat, it has to be chicken. If it's not chicken, it has to be fish. And like, I don't know if I get enough protein. My voice that might disappear. Like, I didn't eat a piece of chicken.
Oh, I was that guy 5-6 years ago.
Yeah.
So you're just preaching to the converted.
But you never hear of anyone being sick with a protein deficiency.
Very, very rare.
Unless people aren't eating enough calories, or it's a third world country. Like, it's not an issue. Like, protein is not, we don't get enough fiber in this country by any matter of means, but we like protein, I'm sure
we're far more obsessed
more than 95 or 98% of the country,
like even if we talk about protein in terms of our own, we've been eating a vegan diet for 16 years.
Yeah.
And when we were playing semi-pro rugby, I was 85 kilos kind of largely. And now 16 years later, eating a vegan diet, we were part of a twin study in UCD where they were comparing nature versus nurture. They had 60 sets of twins and they brought us into a bod pod, and they're measuring your height and your weight, and they were measuring your body fat, like in an actual pod in a lab. It was quite technical. And they kind of worked a lot with Leinster rugby team, who are kind of one of the professional rugby teams here in Ireland. And the lowest on the team there was 11%
body fat.
And they measured me and Dave was clocking in at 6%, the lowest they'd ever seen, and I was 7%, which is kind of elite athlete.
Yeah.
And I weigh 85 kilos, the exact same as I do when I played semi-pro rugby. So I think eating a whole food plant-based diet, it's a wonderful means if you're kind of seeking lean muscle. It's a wonderful and easier way to do it because you're eating foods that are naturally lower in calories and higher in fiber.
Yeah.
But even to give a few examples, like, you know, of athletes like the Williams sisters who dominated tennis for years, they've been eating a vegan diet for...
Predominantly vegan.
Yeah, for the same as Djokovic, you know, world number one. You've got, like, you know, there's your man Patrick Bobomian, who won, you know, World's Strongest Man titles, you know, vegan. The guy, the only American in the American Olympic team in Rio, like, of weightlifting, vegan. You know, like, so there's so many people breaking stereotypes. And it's not to say it gives you any superpowers, but it's more that... It certainly doesn't inhibit your athletic performance, but quite the opposite. And
typically with athletic performance, the golden grail is the ability to recover quicker.
Yeah.
Because the quicker you can recover, the more you can
train. And that's why...
Because eating a healthy plant-based diet, it's generally higher in oxygen,
water.
It's higher in water, it's easy to recover quicker.
And I guess that's just to put that into perspective. You know, cyclists, professional cyclists who dope, like that's... It's really... It gives them capacity to train more. So it's the holy grail is just over, you know... overcoming inflammation so you can train more, so you can build up, you know, body, get your body more and more accustomed to training more.
It makes so much sense. Yeah. Well, your body's getting so much nutrient-dense food that, and I would imagine the reduced alkalinity, all the positives that come with it, it's going to enhance recovery, you know. Something I'm curious about, just because I've done vegan for a short burst of time, just to experiment with it myself, I view everything as an experiment and see what sticks.
Absolutely.
But what is the main change, if you can remember, or even people that are transitioning, because I'm sure you have a lot of people that go from, you know, eating meat, eating fish, to switching to vegan and go, oh, I feel way better. What's kind of the main feedback that you get from other people, or you remember yourselves when you made the transition? Did you notice a difference in energy levels or your sleep?
I think the big thing is that it's not necessarily, I think fundamentally we're all going to die.
Yeah.
Like, no one's getting out of this game alive, so I think... It's not necessarily about being vegan or vegetarian. I think it's about being happy and being healthy. I think if you're healthy, it's easier to be, you're in a better position to support your happiness. So I think in our experience, it's not about being vegan or vegetarian. It's about doing something that's happy, and it's trying to eat more veg. If you don't eat veg, try to eat more. And, you know, if vegan suits you, great. If vegan doesn't suit you,
can I add that? I think, but I'm part of that, like, you know, ultimately is about being happy. But I think, like, in studies, they find that the most central thing to our happiness is our health. Because if you're, like, overweight and your body doesn't function very well and you have low energy, you might have low self-esteem and low confidence. So some, I think it's such a catalytic thing. So I think, you know, what you eat is so important. And our whole message is to try to eat more whole foods. Eat more fruit and veg. That's the thrust of it. It doesn't matter if you're vegan or veggie or whatnot. You know, as Stephen said, we're all going to die. So it's...
Yeah. But try to the most of what you eat based around whole foods.
And to answer your question, actually, you know, as you asked it, we've got this online Happy Heart course, which we've ran for like 7 years, that people do from all over the world. So it's a month-long course where people go on a whole food, plant-based, vegan diet.
Yeah.
So whole food meaning fruit, veg, beans, legumes, and whole grains, no refined foods, no animal foods. So it's a month, it's really a cooking course and an eating course and a health course, but like...
And a support system.
Yeah, so every month is, you know, hundreds of people doing it from all over the world. So we've had so many people through it, and the typically things which people say, geez, I feel so much better, I have so much more energy, I feel lighter. Yeah. I had this rash on my back for the last 5 years and it's gone, or
I'm sleeping better.
You know, my skin's better. I've lost weight. You know, you can't heal one part of the body without healing other parts of it.
Yeah.
So, and I think nowadays when there's such an epidemic of disease and lifestyle created disease, I think, you know, it's
changing
definitely
your diet,
it can definitely
very positive
help
effect.
And,
Yeah, well, the thing is, it's funny you say that, because even the few weeks that I went off meat and fish and everything, I'd problem with skin all my life, completely cleared up. It was probably the best my skin ever was, which is amazing. It shows the inflammation or the acidity that some of the foods you may be eating. I went back eating it because I wanted to be jacked in my arms. But no, just because it was an experiment for a short period, I wanted to see.
Absolutely.
But that sounds like, you know, I'm going to link that up in the show notes as well, because that sounds like something that people might be interested in too.
Yeah, yeah. On that note, I had one more thing in terms of skin. It was interesting. So before we started the shop, so I was 24, I'd been experimenting with diet for like 3 or 4 years, whatever, and I got into fasting and cleansing, and I did this month-long cleanse where it was like, you know, taking bentonite clay and psyllium husk and all sorts of different herbs to kind of clean out my digestive system and get rid of mucoid plaque. And I was doing it, you know, it ended up with a week-long juice fast, and there was enemas and all sorts of stuff. It was very interesting anyway. But I remember on the last day of it, where it was like it was just finished, and I was invited to some guy's 21st birthday party, and I must have been 22 or 23, and I went along. It was rugby players, it was all rugby lads, and I remember going along. And there was three lads separately said to me, "Jeez, Flynn, your skin looks great. What have you been doing?" And like, as you know, being an Irish male, it's like, it's not something that a lad would say to another lad, "Jeez, your skin looks great. Are you using any moisturizer?" So, like, I guess that was the biggest thing for a while. Jeez, you know, a bloke's never going to compliment another.
Yeah, unless it's really shining or something. That's it. When you get another Irish male to compliment you, you're doing something right. Because broke down all kinds of barriers to get that compliment.
Yeah.
I love it. In terms of your training now, I know you do a little bit of everything. You know, what is there something that either of you gravitate more towards than the other? Do you prefer yoga? Do you prefer calisthenics? Is it more or less the same? Or do you have a preference in terms of... For me, I always go back to, I always loved lifting weights. That's always been... I played sport all my life, obviously training for marathons and done all these different events. But I always kind of go back to weight training. It's always my favourite. Is there anything like that with you?
Yoga, calisthenics.
I'd say,
I think if I'm tired or say we're about to do something on TV or about to do a talk or something, we'll always do yoga.
Or handstands.
We'll do handstands.
But we've done, like I'd say, since we've changed our lifestyle, you know, we've done yoga. It's been part of our life all the time. So we did Ashtanga yoga, like militants, for probably 8 years where we did it just about every day. So yoga is definitely... a fallback one.
Yeah.
And handstands, I think, as of recent, and flexibility.
Talk me through the handstands. What
I kind of love the
whole
idea.
I've seen the photos. I've seen your Instagram regularly.
You kind of love the whole body weight, like as in where you're, instead of lifting weights, it's you're actually using every muscle of your body and lots of kind of fine ligaments to kind of hold strength. Because often with kind of weights, you're isolating certain muscle groups and it's very much an isolated movement. Whereas calisthenics, it's all kind of about using your full body. So if anyone's listening, Dave's just doing a handstand.
Dave is literally doing a handstand right in front of me.
And we kind of got into kind of the alignment. So you're trying to get a straight line or you're trying to, you know, move your legs in various different ways and kind of make it where you're...
That's absolutely amazing. I'm actually at the end of this podcast. I'm going to get you to do it again and I'm going to record it and I'm going to link it on my Instagram because that's actually amazing, incredible strength. Look, it makes sense now because you're both super lean, you know, and super really athletic looking. And as it breaks down that barrier straight away of you can't be lean and athletic, you're not eating enough protein. But what you're doing there, and I'll link it on my Instagram, that's crazy strength.
It's core strength, it's core. So we do a lot of core strength. That's something that we love to train.
That's amazing.
We've got kind of animal movement as well, quite a lot. Kind of movement, as in moving your body in various different ways.
What spawned that? What was the introduction to that? Was there anything that triggered it, or was it just an experiment?
No, it's just kind of exploring. You meet someone and they're doing it. It's like, oh, that's cool. Must do more of that. And then you start looking online. Oh, there's loads of that. Great, should I do more of that?
Or someone shows up. I guess now, because we put it up on social media most days, our training or whatever, you get lots of people saying, hey, I do this. Do you want to come train? Can I come out and train with you someday? So you get...
All sorts of different people
coming out to do different things, so it's really fun, you know.
Yeah, it makes it very colourful.
Something I'm kind of curious about as well, because your nutrition is amazing. I was just looking at some of the food downstairs. Anytime I ever try and prep any of your meals, it never looks like that. that's my own deficiency, because my coach Emma always nails it anytime she ever does it. But do you use supplements? Is there anything? Do you get everything you need from food, or do you have supplements that you like to use or fall back on, or...
B12 is the only thing.
B12, often supplements are, I would look at them as expensive urine.
What do you mean by expensive?
That
give references.
Yeah, they're hard to digest, and often you end up just
peeing out these vitamins and minerals in your urine
that you bought. And that we tried to get all our.
This is your own experience.
Yeah.
I tried to get all my nutrients from the food that I eat, and by eating various different food groups and different colourful veg. Because even if you think of antioxidants are foods that are generally, they'll be shown, the brighter the colour, the more antioxidants stop oxidation or stop free radical damage, keeping you looking young, beautiful and sexy.
Yeah.
So the more bright colours you eat, the more antioxidants you're getting to slow down kind of the ageing process.
But I guess like nutrition nowadays is like a minefield, you know. For everyone that says vegan, there's just as many people saying it's blasphemy.
Yeah.
It's paleo, or if it's not paleo, it's like,
and
it's,
and food becomes
zero calories
thing.
Or it's,
yeah.
And it's such an emotional thing that it's really like, it's like religion. It's very, but people have so many opinions on it and there's so many emotions about it, and it's a really crazy space that people, you know, they go, affect that, I'll just have the pizza and the burger, so it's easier. You know, so I think there's no one.
And to answer the question about supplements, we don't supplement.
Yeah,
we get our bloods tested every 6 months. we've been eating a vegan diet for a long period of time. So I was tested recently and I was deficient in B12. So this is, B12 is a macronutrient that people generally get from the soil.
Yeah.
And it's a bacteria. And nowadays in sterile life with antibiotics and with kind of animal, like antibiotics and animal food and all this type of stuff, often people are deficient in B12. Often kind of four to six out of 10 meat eaters are deficient in B12 too. So I supplement that. I take a 2,500 microgram capsule once a week.
But you aren't deficient, which is
no, I'm deficient. I guess I just do more handstands and don't wash my hands. Yeah. Possibly because of bacteria.
That's the secret.
Maybe. But I think what I was going to say there was just in terms of food and people, like it's, I think food is just one part of being a wholesome, healthy human. And you can go too far down the food route where you become neurotic. You know, we ate raw food diets for years. We were very unbalanced. We were very physically very healthy, but we weren't. It wasn't socially acceptable. You were very excluded. You were lonely.
Granny would make an apple pie and Granny go, you have a slice. Like, no, Granny, I'm a vegan.
Yeah.
You know, where immediately you've rejected your granny, you've rejected everyone at the table who's eating apple pie and you're on your own. And it's,
so I think everyone's kind of knows of some old lady who was 97 who drank a bottle of whiskey and smoked 10 fags and just ate ham sandwiches once a week.
Yeah.
And that was all she did. And she was a happy, healthy, but like her life was full of people. She laughed. She didn't have a worry in the world. She had no stress. So I think there's exceptions to every rule, and food is just one part of what we do. So I think it's to look at it in the macro perspective as opposed to going too neurotic. Going, oh, did I get enough this? Did I get enough of that? It's like, you know,
like it's
eat
not
your
that
veg.
Healthy sitting eating a bowl of kale going, I hate kale.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not beating
like,
yourself.
You might as well sit and eat the burger and go, this is amazing.
Thank you.
You know, I think that, so, I think, you know.
But it's the holistic approach, as you said. It's like, if you, we spoke about this, Tommy, who's recording this podcast on the way up, that it doesn't matter if you want to eat the pizza or the burger and you love your life and you're happy, it's like, eat the fucking burger. Like,
yeah.
You know, but it's the increased energy levels, it's the better sleep, it's the mood being stabilized from making healthier choices.
And also what system.
But once again, saying all that, like, I think there's definite stakes that really lead to happier health that we found in our own lives, you know, eating whole foods, eating as much whole foods as you can, you know, getting your sleep, moving, surrounding yourself with people you really enjoy being around and doing something you love, like
it's a lot easier to be happy.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to feel good, you know.
Yeah.
But it's so funny because I live by the adage that success leaves clues, and I've spoken on the podcast, I break my life into 4 quadrants, health, wealth, love and fulfillment, and I score it every month just to make sure I keep on top of everything, health, my energy levels, how I'm feeling, wealth, my bank account, not having to worry about paying bills, my love, my relationships, my family, my daughter, and my fulfillment, the things I would do for free, the podcast, books, blogging, things of that nature. And it's funny because you've just said it in another way. You know, building off principles of what makes you happy and then just coming back, be around good people, eat good food that makes you feel good, sleep well, and just be happy doing it. So
yeah.
I love it. On that note, I'm going to jump into some rapid fire questions, lads. So we can jump between both of you and we can do one each in case you've got different answers. And just first thing that comes to mind, you can one word answer it, you can flesh it out, you can expand on it, you can do whatever you want with it.
Great.
Okay. First question. When you think of the word successful, who's the first person that comes to mind outside of, say, each other or a family member?
Buddha.
Why?
Well, he's at ease. He's got no problems. It doesn't matter if he's got money or no money or whatever. You know, he's just at ease. You know, that kind of a character, more a spiritual person rather than a Bill Gates type person.
I love it.
Yeah, exactly. Gandhi was the first one came to my head, and I've never read a book about Gandhi, but just the way people speak of him, it seems to be, and I'm sure his life was torturous and difficult, but the life he carried out has had a huge impact, and it's very inspiring.
Yeah, I know. I've read his autobiography. It's incredible.
I've never read it.
It's so powerful.
Yeah.
To see how his and Nelson Mandela's book, very, very similar messages I got from both about going through hardship and how suffering molds us to make the world a better place because we're here. And I'm actually reading a book at the minute by Tara Brach called Radical Acceptance, which is based off the principles of the Buddha, which is something that I'm going to be exploring myself over the next 3, 4, 5 months because of that. You know, attachment, suffering comes from attachment, and that's kind of the whole philosophy of it. So interesting one that's the question, that's the one, the answer you have. Next one, what purchase of €100 or less has most positively affected your lives in the last 12 months, 6 months, whatever time period?
A flight.
I mean, Yeah, well, somewhere where it's always like a flight to go somewhere because your perspective is usually changed. You're out of your bubble, you get a different perspective. So that would always be a flight somewhere where you've got space to think, reflect, look at your life and be in a different place. Like when we go to London all the time, we'll usually have space where we can sit and eat and reflect and think and dream and read.
That's a good answer, yeah.
And that would be the most valuable thing for me. It's never a material thing.
Do you find that you're, when you disconnect yourself from your normal existence in terms of regular routine, that's when ideas and stuff start to come to you, or is it just
ideas come all the time? Like, we're very creative people, but like definitely being away, there's more space.
Time to pursue those ideas.
Or to just for
and
them
to see, and to sort them out as in of what's
I would think
and
for them
left.
To breathe. There's more space for them to breathe and have room around them, whereas in day to day life where it's very busy and demanding,
next,
there's
next,
less
next.
Room for them to really let grow, them grow blossom. And flop blossom, you know, so a way you can really feed them and, you know, to see what they turn into.
Yeah, I love that. I find that all the time. I try and schedule in at least once a month or once every 2 months if it's somewhere far away where I'm just away out of Ireland or away somewhere, because as you said, I never thought of it that way. It lets those ideas breathe because they never really come as such during those trips, but my God, do they flesh out and breathe. And I'm totally going to steal that. I'll reference you back when I do. What book, besides your own, of course, do you think that everybody on the planet would benefit from reading? So not necessarily your favourite book, but one that you may have read that you're like, a lot of people would benefit from
reading.
I'm going
to pick something way out there. Okay. I'm going to pick
I know you're
Small is Beautiful by E.F. Schumacher. It's kind of economics as if people mattered, and there's a chapter in there called Buddhist Economics. I'd highly recommend that.
Oh, I 100% am getting on that as soon
and
as I
my
read.
One, I would go with like A New Earth by Eckhart Tolle or something, or I'd go with one of Byron Katie's books, which are much more like, at the moment I'm reading one of Byron Katie's new books, and hers is all about like, once you change your thinking, you change your experience, and it's really questioning your beliefs about everything, because suffering really starts in your head, as opposed to, it's not what other people do to you or what life presents to you. It's more just accepting now.
I love
and being present.
Her books are amazing. Her stuff on just changing the story you tell yourself and how everything changes when you change your focus, you change your state, and you change your mindset. I love her stuff as well. So and I'm checking that out as soon as I get home. I'm
good.
Like, oh,
yeah,
100%
good.
Straight into that chapter.
Good. I really like that.
This is an interesting one because of your transition from where you went. So I'm going to change it up a little bit. But is there something that you've changed your mind about in the last couple of years? So I know, obviously, when you went from playing rugby, you know, and living that lifestyle to what you mentioned about yoga, what you mentioned about vegan, vegetarian. But is there anything in the last couple of years that you've changed your mind about?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think when we first started the business, we would have been, money is bad and it's evil and it's awful. But I think over the last few years, we've realized that if you really want to change the world and have a positive impact, you need capital.
You
can't
necessarily need it, but it's easier.
It's definitely easier. You can leverage more things and influence more things with capital and resources. You don't need it, obviously, but it can make things quicker.
Took about 10 years to make peace with profit.
Really?
Profit. And yeah, like, and money not being bad, you know, because I think that would, once you like, we would study business and being all about like, oh, money is God,
and
then
maybe I'm
making it up
for him 30 all this
and then and then we threw it out completely and went down the spiritual road, very much so. And then, you know, it's taken time to come back to find a middle ground where we're like, okay, well, I think if you really want to positively affect society and have a positive impact, it's certainly easier with resources and money. You can influence things quicker.
Yeah, and as you said, once you're not attached to money, like, money is a
tool.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
No one owns it as such. Like,
yeah.
It's great master, terrible, or great slave, terrible master.
Very good.
So
even I could say we changed, like, when we came back first from traveling, we were very righteous about everyone should eat a vegan diet and very preachy. And even when we started our Happy Heart course about 7 years ago, it was quite dogmatic. Like, you should eat a vegan diet, and if you're eating meat, bad on you.
Yeah.
And you kind of realise that people hate that, and that's really binary and very exclusive. And you kind of, I guess over the period, maybe about 7 years ago or 6 years ago, we kind of changed and kind of realised, wow, it's much, you tell people, yeah, eat your burger and enjoy it, but try to just eat more veg. It's a lot easier to digest and a lot more inclusive. And I think someone was saying, they were at a talk with a really kind of cool yoga dude, and he finished the talk, someone asked, what's the difference between healthy and unhealthy? So he wrote what's the difference between illness and wellness? So he wrote illness on the board and he wrote wellness on the board, and he walked up and he just circled, illness is I, wellness is we.
I love that.
And I think that was like just its inclusiveness. And I think with us changing our diet, it was much more inclusive, I think, or changing
and I think,
our outlook.
And I think to use another metaphor, you know, they say you attract more wasps with honey than you do with vinegar.
Yeah.
Or you attract more flies or whatever it is. But just more than like we would have been very preachy or dogmatic. And then we realized, well, you know, live your life as an example. If people are interested, they'll come and be curious.
I love it. And what you've done, just from kind of going off script here, from a personal experience, you break down that barrier. Even for me, even a couple of years ago when I kind of first came onto the scene, finding out about you, started following you, I had this, oh, vegans are extreme. I'm like, I don't want to be that person because I don't want to be that ideological about anything. I'm like, oh no,
I'm not doing vegan. You know, everyone that does vegan, they're all preachy wankers. Like, this is the story I told myself. But you broke down that barrier. Because I'm like, these are just normal dudes that are super happy with what they're doing. They have a similar background to how I was. And I'm like, they're just doing their thing and they're happy. And they just happen to be vegan and be amazing at what they do in terms of recipes and foods. So just from my side, that's a personal thank you for breaking down that barrier. Because it's the only reason I've been able to kind of explore that side at all is because of that. And I think you're doing that and having made that switch from an ideological righteousness, clearly, because it did it with me. It's done it with thousands and thousands of other people, probably millions at this stage. So just a personal thank you on that one.
Thank you,
Brian. Do either of you have a quote that you live by or refer to often? There's a kind of an in-running joke on people that listen to my podcast because I attach to quotes because I'm able to use it as a reference and it helps me with just understanding an idea and allows me to kind of live my life by certain quotes. I love Theodore Roosevelt's comparison is the thief of joy. I love lots of different things that just, you know, suffering comes from attachment. Is there any quote that you have that you live by or refer to often?
Like our granny used to always say to us that, like, sure, your motto, lads, is be happy, have fun. That was your purse that he said, sure, that's, why would you be worried about that? Sure, the way you live your life is be happy, have fun. That's your motto. So that was, you know, sort of pretty the most relevant. Or else I like that John Lennon one, you know, the one where when he was 5, he said he got given a, you know, that quote. I can't remember. I left
the
it
test
up
about what do you want to be?
What do you want to be? And he said, I want to be happy. And the teacher said, you don't understand the assignment. And he said, I don't think you understand life.
Yeah, I love that.
I'm sure it sounds like, I don't know if he really said that or if that was real, but it's a really nice little
story,
metaphor, a story or whatever.
I love it. I love that quote. It's amazing. Okay, lads, this has been so awesome, and I know how crazy your schedule is, so I'm so grateful to have been able to get this time with you. Tell people about the new book that's coming out. Tell them about everything that you're doing now that you want them to check out, and where's the best place for them to find you?
So new book comes out May the 5th. It's called Recipes for Happiness. It's our third book, so it's obviously, you know, it's our fundamentals for what makes us happy. We've also got, there's 100 recipes in it, so it's, this one's all vegan, whole food, it's plant-based, it's quick, it's easy, it's simple, but it's very much a lifestyle book. You know, we talk about what, you know, what makes us, like, lots of stuff which we've talked about here. We go into more detail about exercise
and
movement.
In terms of our books, this is our third book, and I know we never thought we'd write a book, and we started off the cafe, and I think when we first started, there was no courses to go learn how to be a vegan chef. It was, you know, a vegan chef, what the heck? You could only learn traditional French cooking. So we kind of learned our cooking from our first chef we started with, is Doreen Palmer, who did about 30 years kind of teaching cooking and cooking. So we trained under her from a vegetarian vegan point of view. So we trained under her. And I think one of the best ways of learning how to cook is open your own restaurant. If your food's crap, you have no customers.
Yeah. Direct feedback.
Yeah, exactly. Instant feedback or instant criticism, whatever way it could be. But over the years, people would regularly ask for recipes and you go, oh, that was delicious. Do you have a recipe? You go, yeah, I have a recipe for about 150 people. Would you like it? And they go, this type of thing.
But can I fast track that story and just say the first two books to date have sold more than 150,000 copies. So they've sold really well, and really this one here is definitely much easier, much more accessible.
Amazing.
And a lot more quicker dinners. There's a lot of 10-minute dinners and easy practical stuff that we actually
do. You put a whole section on fake meats too.
Yeah, there's a whole section on, like, you know, vegan steak and vegan burgers and vegan chicken McNuggets and, you know, this type of stuff. So there's lots of fun stuff in there as well as cakes. But I think the bit that's interesting is our exploration of happiness. That kind of bit's quite interesting.
I love
as well.
That. Where is the best place for people to pick that book up? I've already pre-ordered it off Amazon, so you can definitely get it on Amazon. But where is the best place for people to pre-order it? And if they're listening to this after the 3rd of May,
if you're listening to this in Ireland, Eason's or Dubray Books or any of the good bookshops will hopefully stock it, or online.
And to pre-order at Amazon.
Amazon Echo UK.
Amazing. And for people to find out more about you in general, your lifestyle, your recipes, your tips, where's the best place for people to follow everything on your
whatever
journey?
You're into, like if you use YouTube a lot, we have a lot of recipes, and if you're seeking for recipes, go to YouTube. If you're kind of into just see what those lunatics are at, Snapchat or Instagram stories is generally pretty good.
Yeah.
Twitter, I don't want to use. We use a bit.
Instagram is probably.
Awesome, and I'll have linked all of those up in the show notes, so you'll be able to check that out. Everyone listening, lads, thank you so much again.
Brilliant,
Brian. Pleasure. Thanks a million. Thank you. Well done with all.